This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.
And mission is something where you go off somewhere and you help people. But you know, I think all of us are aware that Satan is very active in the business world. I think we know that. The greed and a lot that goes on in the business world is not, there's corruption that goes on there. But is it possible God can be active there as well? Is it possible that God can be using business in a way that maybe we haven't thought about? We know we live in a fallen world, but it's redeemable. And as we go out in our activities day by day, God is wanting us to be co-workers together with him. I'm going to look at five areas this afternoon. First of all, work. Way back in the beginning, what did God have in mind, this thing called work? What was he thinking? What was his intentions? Second, business ownership. Is it for you? Maybe some of you are young and wondering, should I be a business owner or not? Do I have the proper gifting for that? Should I get involved in it? Talk about secular business with spiritual skin. Sometimes we hear people say, my business is the Lord's, and yet you watch how it's operated and you think, does the Lord really want his name attached to that thing? Or you see a fish on a business card and you wonder about, does God want to be attached to the business? Sometimes we call this a business is business mentality, or separating the sacred and the secular. Another area, kingdom-focused business. Is that even possible? Can you bring the kingdom into business? Is that a possibility? And finally, I want to talk about business, the danger, and the dream. I would propose that in business there is both great danger and tremendous potential today. Let's start out with work. What did God have in mind? Do you tend to see your occupation and physical work in conflict with your spiritual life? And I work with young people sometimes who do that. Maybe they've seen their father go off and just pour himself into business with very little spiritual thought. And they react and go the other direction, and they don't want anything to do with business. But I'd like to back up just a little bit and think about, what is work? I'm going to look at five areas here. What was God's original design? Notice this. And the Lord God took the man and put him into the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. There's a couple points I want here. Understand, first of all, that God is a worker. Both times when he shows himself, primarily in the very beginning and also when Jesus came, both were involved in work. They were involved in physical activity. In fact, you could say the majority of Jesus' life was spent working. Think about Adam for a little bit in the Garden of Eden. As he was dressing and keeping, was that unspiritual or was it spiritual? What was it? What kind of a connection was there between work? And yet you also see in Adam, there was a refraining from work. He talks about him walking in the cool of the day. But I want to suggest that both communing with God in the cool of the day or working, if he would have chosen to not do either one of those, it would have been neglecting God's will. Examining my attitude toward work. Now, there is an attitude in Western culture about work. And it's something like this, that if you want to get honor, if you want to get wealth, you just create labor-saving devices. That's what we're after. We're looking for something to stop this labor thing. We're trying to avoid that thing of labor. And leisure today has been exalted above labor. In fact, sometimes I want to get through with my work so I can get back to my leisure. But is it possible God intended leisure so we could actually get back to our work? What is it that God was after? Beauty and importance of physical labor. God sees beauty in labor, not just in what it produces, but in labor itself, because as we labor, we are fulfilling his will. I'd like to suggest that the next time you stack firewood, the next time you hoe down through a garden, that you stop and look at it and enjoy that. God intends that we take pleasure. That's what God did. He got done with creating the earth. He stopped and said, that's good. He took pleasure in what he had done. God is a designer, a creator, and he loves to restore. And we talk about this often in church. But do you realize that's exactly what we do when we work? A farmer takes a barren piece of land and produces something out of it. He's doing exactly what God did. Something where there was chaos and made something beautiful out of it. Same thing when a carpenter takes an old house. Maybe it's run down and he restores it. That's what God does. He comes into our life and takes something that's worthless and makes something beautiful out of it. Inventors. Think about inventors. What do? Well, they imagine something. They create something. They design. That's what God did. We're actually doing the same thing that God did. And we need to, I think, rethink our theology regarding work, regarding what it is. Do you view labor as unspiritual? How do you view your occupation? Do you do your spiritual life in the morning when you get up, you get your Bible out and do that, and then you go off and do your occupation? Do you have a separation between those two? I think if most of us are honest, we struggle with that a little bit. We tend to think that praying and reading and all that's spiritual. Going to church, that's all spiritual. Then you put that aside and you go off and do this kind of necessary evil over here for a while, and then come back and do the spiritual again. God never intended for that dichotomy to exist. He wants us to pull those together. Now, when I was writing the book, It's Not Your Business, I went out and asked some questions, some interviews with people. And I want to show you the questions that I asked them. Just think about it in your own mind as you look at this. Number one, if you hear that a Christian businessman has 100 employees, is your first thought positive or negative? Just analyze that in your own heart. What do you think? Two, is a man more spiritual if he, A, is an employer, B, is employed by someone else, C, operates a small family business, or D, is a missionary? How would you answer that question? Three, does God call some to be missionaries? Four, does God call some to be businessmen? Five, can a follower of Jesus become owner of a large business? How would you answer those questions? Just think about it in your own mind. Now, we know that Jesus came along and asked the disciples to leave their occupations and go and follow him. Does that mean that everyone that is called needs to leave their occupation? Should everyone who is serious about Jesus do the same thing? Well, here's what I found out. We don't agree. There's lots of difference of opinion on this topic. And I created three separate categories, and I'll just run through them here real quick. First of all, there's a production Pauls. Production Pauls are people that like business. It seems like everything they touch just seems to work. They have a gifting. There's not a lot of them, but you can picture in your mind, you're going to think of some right now, of some men you know of, that it seems like every time they touch something, the thing just works. They like business. They wish everybody was involved in business. They can't understand why more people aren't. I had one of them tell me, it's just a lack of faith, that's all. Other folks should be involved in business. Or there's the Larry Littles. Larry Littles, they're okay with business. They can see some potential, but keep it small. Don't get too big with that thing. Then you have the Servant Sams. These are just labels that I put on them. But these are individuals who say that, you know, work and business ownership, Jesus would have never been an owner. He would have been a servant. He'd have been glad to sweep the floors, but he would have never owned the thing. They can't quite imagine him being in the corner office. They can't quite get that together. Now, I want to propose that there's different roles. God has given different gifts to different people, and that's why we are hearing different responses from people, and sometimes there's reaction involved here too. But God's desire is to reconcile the world into himself. And so everything we're involved in, whether we are a production Paul, Larry Little, a servant Sam, whatever we are, we should be involved in this reconciliation back to God. But this can only be accomplished if we're able to connect the sacred and the secular. We got to bring those two back together again if we're going to actually understand that. Now, our challenge in doing this is this. We need to redeem the physical without lowering the spiritual. And that can be a challenge in our lives. There is an assumption sometimes in our circles that telling people is more powerful than showing them. But I want to suggest that there's an abundance of words out there, but we have very few good life examples sometimes, especially in business, of demonstrating something that is powerful. Now, we're going to come back to this again, but I want to say it here again. Risk, there's also a lot of risk in business. It can be a tremendous snare in a man's life. We can all think of that. We can think of individuals. I can think of a handful right now, right off, of men I've seen get caught up in business and forget the kingdom. I want to make that clear. We're not saying here that's not possible. It's very possible. 1 Corinthians 7, and they that use this world as not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passeth away. The Amplified Version says this, and those who deal with this world or overusing the enjoyments of this life as though they were not absorbed by it. And this is the challenge. Most of us have seen a truck driver who gets very enamored with a truck. Okay, he polishes that thing and just works on it. It's almost, he almost forgets what the thing's intended for. It's actually made to haul stuff. But he's out there just polishing the chrome. We can do that with our businesses as well. We can get so excited about the business and forget, what is it God actually intended this business to do? Now, I think he intends for us to use our occupations, whether you're an employee, whether you're an employer, he intends for us to use it redemptively, to use it in our world, and we'll get into a little more of that. Business ownership, is it for you? I want to acknowledge right up front that I believe business ownership is not for everyone. God does not give the same gifts to everyone. I've sat down with men before. I have some pictures in my mind of sitting down with a man who had a business, and behind him were book after, was just loads of books from seminars about business. And I sat there and thought, there's nothing I can tell this man that's going to make this business work. He just didn't have the gifting. He felt pressured from his community to be involved in business. That's what good Anabaptists do. He'd been pushed into a business that he was not prepared for. So we need to be honest about that, that it's not for everyone. I used to work with a man. He worked for my father. He longed to be in business on his own. He just, if he could just be on his own, he'd just make so much more money and life would be good. And I'd hear about it almost every day. He'd make this comment. He finally went on his own for about 4 or 5 years, and he was so sick of that. He was so glad to get back working for somebody else. That was not his gifting. This doesn't mean he's better or worse. God has given different gifts. I didn't choose. God didn't give me a checklist, say, I'll take one of this and one of these and two of these. He didn't do that. He gave us gifts for a specific purpose, and we are best serving him when we utilize the gifts we've been given and not try to be someone else. So where is God calling you? I want to just quickly go through some points for you to think about. If you're wrestling with this issue, what is God calling me to? First of all, analyze your motives. Sometimes it's difficult to analyze our own motives. That's why we need our brothers around us. But men with the gift of business can be driven by wrong things. They can be given by just a love of production. I've experienced that. I love production. If I can produce something at 5 an hour, I'm working on 6 an hour before long. I can be driven by just production. I enjoy that. To be in control. If you're the owner, you can have these feelings of, I just want to be in control of everything. Very easy to go down that road. Or wealth and the power it brings. You can go down that road. These are all wrong roads you can go down with business. Analyze your motives. It's very easy for business to fill a spot in a man's heart that was intended for God only. It can become his God. We've seen that. Sometimes that's why we pull back away from business, is we see that in someone else. Do you have proper gifting? Some men have a strong desire to have their own business, but they're not natural managers. They just aren't. And I want to say again, you can't read enough books, you can't go to enough seminars to do that. Some of those giftings, I think, are really from God. Asking for advice and accountability. Ask those who know you. Ask the people you don't want to ask. That's really the people who know you, your local congregation. State your goals and ask for ongoing accountability, even if you do start a business. Accepting your gifts and limitations. I think it's obvious in our world there are more people with the gift of being a janitor than there are the gift of being a CEO. But both are needed in an organization. And accept the gifts that God has given you, whatever that is. Accepting the gifts and abilities of others. The owner, if you are given the gift of ownership, you need to appreciate the gifts of the man who runs the bandsaw and has for the last 30 years. Some of us aren't cut out to do that, and some are. And both of us need to appreciate the other. The same thing with the man running the bandsaw. He needs to appreciate the gifting of the man who's controlling the business. We need to acknowledge these gifts are from God and appreciate them. Secular business with spiritual skin. What does that look like? I'm going to say that's professing to be a Christian, calling our business a Christian business, but operating it in a way that Jesus wouldn't actually recognize. If you're employed this afternoon, think about your business. What are you producing that's not for profit, that's coming out of your business? What are you doing for your community? In what ways are you being a blessing to them that has nothing coming back to you? Business is business mentality. Let's just think about, I'll just describe it as Bishop Robert. He's a man who's good at operating a church, he's good at operating a business, but he operates the two totally differently. On Sunday, he sees people as individuals that God has created that he wants to reach out to and bless, and he cares about them, and he'll go to all kinds of lengths to reach out to these people and help them on Sunday. Monday morning comes and people are something else. People are objects you make money off of. And you can seamlessly move these two lives together to where on Sunday you're operating one way and on Monday you're operating another. That's not how God is asking for us to operate businesses. And we see that sometimes. We see men sometimes in authority in church even who have that ability to operate a large business, but they operate totally different on Sunday and Monday. I call that business as business mentality. Over here you do this on church and Sunday. You very holy lives over here. But business is business. When you get to Monday morning, you got to make money, and so you go after a different direction. Giving, the end justifies the means. As long as the profits are going to go to missions, it doesn't matter how I operate my business. Do you think God is actually pleased when you drive a hard bargain with someone in your community so you can give money to missions? Is that really what he has in mind for his people to be doing? There's a friend of mine who comes from a non-Anabaptist background, and he did not live close to any Anabaptists. And he told me, he said, I longed for the day that I could move closer to where all the Anabaptists live, and I finally did. He said, I've been extremely disappointed. He said, I would much rather do business with the non-Anabaptists in my community than I would with the Anabaptists. That's a shame. That should not happen in our communities. The slippery secular slope. What I'm thinking about here is using the business world as a reference point in your business. Reading all the trade magazines, using all the debt ratios, business coaches, all this, getting all your pointers from surrounding society to operate your business, and then tack a few verses on in the end. That's not what God has in mind. We need to be very careful. There are good lessons you can learn from secular sources, but be very careful. Use the filter of the Word of God as you do that. Hidden fear. Jesus would go broke, wondering if really the teachings of Jesus are superior. You know, if I actually started doing unto others like they want me to, I'm not sure if I'd make a profit, actually. Would that work? And this fear can cause us to adopt the business as business mentality. But I want to ask you something. Are you willing to give up your business to follow Jesus? Now, I'm going to propose that much of what Jesus said many times, I can give you lots of examples of treating people like you would want to be treated will actually increase your sales. But I'm not going to promise you it always will. There are times I've seen people lose an awful lot of money simply because they would not go after a lawsuit, or they would not. I could give stories if I had time. But go back to the why question. Why are you in business? Are you willing to walk away from the business and the profit and the prestige and whatever else your business brings you to follow Jesus? Kingdom focused business. Is that actually possible? And if so, what would that look like? I want to begin by thinking about clear purpose and vision. I mentioned there's a lot of pressure from the outside world to conform to certain ways of doing business. If you're going to push back against that, if you're going to operate your business different, you're going to have to do it with clear purpose, with clear vision. When I was preparing for to write the book, It's Not Your Business, I went around and did a lot of interviews just trying to figure out what all's out there. And I went to it was a New Order Amish. It was a second-generation business, and I want to just share a little bit about this business. I was very impressed with it. This was a business where they had a cabinet shop at one time, and they ended up starting then a sawmill. And the reason they started the sawmill was this. It was a generation before. The man I was talking to, he was older now, but his father had come one day, and he said, you know what? We already have a nice business here with the cabinet shop, but I think there's really a lot of needs out there we could be providing, both in employment for our community here, poverty in the world. Let's start a sawmill just simply to help those needs. But he said, I have some fears about this, so let's write up a document and describe just a vision statement, mission statement to describe how we're going to stay on track. And I want to share this with you. I want to just read through it and listen and think about what he's saying. Number one. Finance the work of God's, this is purpose, finance the work of God's kingdom and seek to aid in the alleviation of the suffering of the poor. Two, seek a unified, well-structured, family-oriented business environment. Business should serve all involved well and enhance Christian living. Three, prevent overworked and overstressed working conditions. Four, pay good wages to enhance the employee's financial well-being. Notice he's caring about his employees. Five, hire enough employees to prevent being overworked ourselves. Now, this is normally we think of vision statements being the long-term, what the organization hopes to achieve, and the mission statement the short-term. This is actually kind of a combination of the two. This man hadn't went to all kinds of seminars to learn all this. He was just trying to keep his children on track. Let's go on. Six, provide enough office or management staff to stay ahead of costly computation errors and endeavor to be legal in everything for conscience sake. Seven, keep profits under control to prevent tax overburdens and a luxurious lifestyle. Eight, work hours that won't hamper family life and or community service, etc. Nine, provide flexibility if someone needs to take time off. 10, be a debt-free company. But I want you to notice the statement at the end of this. He put down this: the price of being a disciple of Christ in today's business environment is eternal vigilance. Now, the fascinating thing about this paper is this. This is a very simple office, a pretty good-sized operation, actually. But he had just a simple office, and he had this in the top drawer right behind him. And he said, I've never shown this to anyone before. So it's been my father, we worked at it together. But I bring my boys in here every once in a while, we read it together. We just read it out loud together to remember why we're in business. Now, I want to challenge you, if you're serious here in the United States in operating a business for the kingdom, it means continuing to go back and refocus again. Why are we in business? And transferring that on to your children. While I was there, I asked him, I said, I'm just curious, and I asked everybody that I interviewed this question, can you name something that you do in your community that brings nothing back to you? Just something to bless the community. And he said, yeah, I can. He said, we produce about a semi-load of sawdust here every week. And he said, the easiest thing for us to do would be to hire someone to get it out of here. But instead, we allow all the Amish around here to come in and dibs and drabs and take out little bits of this sawdust. He said, frankly, it's a pain in the neck. But he said, I know it's a blessing to these people around here. He said, none of them are my customers, but I want to be a blessing to the community. Think about that in your own business. What are you doing that brings nothing back to you? How can you use your business to actually be a blessing in the community? The need for profitability. Kingdom-focused business does not mean anti-profit. Sustainability demands profitability. You have to make a profit. But it does mean that profit is not on the throne. It does mean there's going to be a time come sometimes where profit and the kingdom of God are in conflict. There's going to be a cross at some point. Which wins? That's the question that each of us need to answer is are you willing at times to give up profitability to bless someone, that the kingdom of God can actually be expanded? And I want to say this too. If you're not able in your business to allow that to happen, find a different business. There's not every business out there that's conducive to kingdom business. Mutual blessing in every transaction. This one is huge. Notice the words of Jesus, and as you would that men should do to you, do you also to them likewise. This teaching should permeate everything you do. When you're buying, ensure the other person is still making a profit. When you're selling, make sure they're getting good value for what you're selling. Those words should permeate our businesses. We should be famous for that. Servant leadership. Understand that I, as an owner, am actually the servant of the King. I serve the Lord Christ. Honesty in marketing. This is a challenging one. We need to market to sell our products, but how do you market? How do you go about that? I had a friend of mine that had a hardware store. He told me one of the challenges was sometimes there'd be a little old poor widow come in, and she wanted Drano because she had her sink was plugged up. He said, I had a notion that actually bleach would probably work about as good as Drano. What should I tell her? Do I tell her that? What do you do in those kinds of situations where you know that actually your product may not be exactly what this person needs? Do you go ahead and push it? What would Jesus do in that situation? Marketing is one we have to be very careful in how we present ourselves to others. Creating curiosity about Christ. I have a brother I've worked with some, has a woodworking business. And I asked him years ago, I said, so tell me, what is it you're trying to do in your business in the community? He said, my goal is that every person that comes in the door, they walk out with a curiosity about Christ. They see something in the way I operate that says, there's something different about that guy, something different about how he's operating. Think about your business. How can you create curiosity about Christ? Make that a goal, whether you own a business or not. Business, the danger and the dream. I want to start first with the danger. Now, make no mistake, there is tremendous danger in business and wealth. When I wrote the book, It's Not Your Business, Christian Aid sends it out to different reviewers to review, and one of the reviewers that read it wrote back and said, it's a good book, but I'm afraid what it's going to do is push our men even further into business. It's going to make them, it's already a problem among us. We've already got this big animal we're dealing with, and now we're going to, I'm laying in bed thinking about that. Am I doing that? Am I ignoring the danger here? Am I pushing people on into something that actually is going to be detrimental to them? The danger, one of the dangers, the lust of other things. Jesus said, and these are they which are sown among thorns, such as hear the word, and the cares of this world, and the deceitfulness of riches, and the lust of other things, entering in, choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. Business cares and wealth, it's a vine that can choke out spiritual vitality. We are living in a country of other things. There are distractions all around us, and wealth and business ownership can allow you to pursue those. You can chase all that. It can give you the ability to go after it. Wealth from business makes all those distractions available. The danger, a man's source of life and fulfillment. God wants to be our life source. Business can supplant that. It can become your fulfillment in life. There's more dangers. But if you find yourself going back over profit and loss and balance sheets and just rejoicing in how this thing is growing, and be careful about that. The dream. The burden of this message is this, this little presentation today, is I want to acknowledge the danger, but also point to the dream, the great potential there is. God created us to work. We can't escape that, but we need to be using that. And so what might God have in mind in the business world? Church planting potential. You move out into a new area like we heard about today, you know what the first thing you're going to need? It's a business. You're going to need something going on out there to help your youth, to help you to survive. Now, I want to suggest that business is very closely connected with church planting, and I want to use the Moravians just a little bit as an example. You know, the Moravian mission movement was a tremendous focus on trades. Count Zinzendorf himself was highly educated, and yet his focus was on trades. He wanted to train his people as they went out all around the globe, that when they got there, they would have a way to not only survive, but to reach out to people. They saw trades as extremely important. Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, you can still see the buildings there. Some have been recreated. But occupational trades was the vehicle they were using to spread the gospel. 1745, 4 years after Bethlehem was founded, there was 35 trades being taught. They didn't stick with just a few trades. They had pottery and carpentry and butchers and farmers and doctors and tailors and just on and on and on. John Adams, writing to his wife, said this, speaking of the Moravians, they have carried the mechanical arts to a greater perfection here than in any place which I have seen. Their industry was noticed by the secular world. Today, the Anabaptist people are also known for their industry. But are they known for the missions? Each missionary went out with a skill. They were expected to be self-supporting. They went out knowing there was not going to be a monthly check following them. They went out and they were planning on making a living when they got there, but they used trades to do it. And enabled to help and assist others economically. They went to dark, poor places, and as they taught trades, they were able to help those people become sustainable. So not only providing for themselves, they were also spreading that knowledge on. This made them wanted. They were wanted around the globe. Sometimes our missions go into places and we're viewed as the lazy people. We're the only ones that don't work. Moravians were not that way. They went in and worked when they got there. Provided opportunity for interaction. One thing I've noticed, I work increasingly more in Muslim context, and I've noticed this, that commerce is a language everybody speaks. Everybody. I can sit down with a Muslim man and start talking to him about how to improve his business. He's all ears. He wants to know. In fact, I'm from America. He assumes I have three easy steps and a secret sauce to make him wealthy. That's just the assumption that's out there in the Arab world. But in interaction, it gives opportunities to show how we act when things don't go our way. When there's disappointments in business, it provides that opportunity for us. We're viewed as contributors in other cultures. Now, remember, Moravians were not special people. They were simply people living in different parts of the globe. And that's what we should be. A missionary should not be a special person out there. He's going and living in another spot and working when he gets there. Now, I'm going to just touch a little bit on restricted countries. I personally believe it's one of the best vehicles today for getting into restricted countries. I'll give you just a few examples. Here's a picture from Bangladesh. This is the SALT program in Bangladesh right now. This is a new area. This man come out of an area we were in earlier, became a teacher, a believer. Then he moved into another area. He just started here in the last few months. But people crowd around. They want to know, how can we operate businesses? Commerce is a vehicle that goes everywhere. It doesn't matter if you live in Cambodia here on stilts. You may be a long ways from a supermarket, but someone will figure out how to bring the supermarket to you. We all do this. We're involved in business in all different ways. I'm amazed at how we learn to do business wherever we are. When we move into an area and bring better methods, people want to know, how do we do that? Right now in the Rohingya camp, some of you read about in Bangladesh, the Rohingya people. I was just there a couple months ago, and we're teaching them how to use these hillsides in agriculture. They want to know. It's all washing out. The only reason we can get in this camp is by doing this. They know they need it. They don't want Christians there, but they need this knowledge. It's a way to get in the door into countries. What if? I want to leave you with a few thoughts on just some dreams. I want you to think a little bit about a Moravian. Let's just say that he headed off to Peru, wherever it was. He was going to go take the gospel somewhere, and he was going to, maybe it was pottery, going to make pottery when he got there. How do you suppose he would have conducted business when he got there? Do you think he would have just go out and drive the price down when he bought stuff? And do you suppose he would have haggled around and tried to get the top penny out of everything when he sold it? What would he have done? Remember what his goal was? His goal was to spread the gospel when he got there. How would he have operated business? Well, I think he would have wanted everyone to win in every transaction that he had. He would have wanted that. You don't have to go to Peru to do that. You can do it right where your business is right now. That's what God intends for our businesses to do. So what if everyone in your local congregation was using their business as a mission? What would that look like? Dream about that a little bit. What if our businesses were known for providing more than people expect? I remember a man that was a farmer. My father used to talk about him. He lived in Kansas. And my father said the man was so generous you had to keep your eye on him. He said when people would share crop with him, he would sneak corn over on the other side trying to help the other man out. He was famous for that. This man's gone now for a long time. We're still talking about him. That's how rare that is in our culture. What if you're always giving customers more than they expected? How would that affect the people around us? What if our businesses were known for ensuring that others win when buying? You know, there's a story I think I might have put in one of the books. I love this story because it epitomizes what I'm trying to teach here. It's a true story. It was a man who wanted to buy a tool. And the cost was about $500. He didn't use the tool that often, so he thought, well, I'll just keep my eyes open. I'll see a used one someday, and I'll buy that. And so one day he was going down the road, and he saw a garage sale that he pulled off. And he walked over there, and here was the exact tool that he wanted for $35. And he was willing to pay $300 for it. Now, what would you do in that situation? Well, here's what he did. He knew that it was a widow that was selling it. Her husband had died. She had no idea what that tool was worth. So he walked over to her and said, this tool you have for $35 is actually, I was willing to pay $300 for it. And so I'll give you $300 for it. And he paid her $300. How long do you think that story stayed on that property? Would he have been better off to have paid $35 and taken the rest and bought a bunch of tracks and passed it out in the neighborhood? See, sometimes we forget the power in business, the power in commerce. But he cared about more than just how much he paid for that tool. he was wanting to be a good example and a blessing in that community. What if our businesses were known for valuing souls more than sales? You know, this is a heart issue. And the heart issue is extremely important. When I was writing this book, It's Not Your Business, I was in Holmes County sitting down in a little restaurant. The Amishman came in that knew me. He was a business owner there in the area. He came down, sat down, and said, well, Gary, what are you doing? And so I told him what I was doing. He said, you know, I want to tell you something about the Amish. And he was an old order Amish himself. He said, the more you try to tighten us down, the more innovative we get. He said, years ago, our people wanted to kind of control how big our businesses were. So they come up with all kinds of rules about this thing. They said no 12-volt, no hydraulics, and whatever. So I can take you around right now and show you the districts that have the tightest rules have the largest businesses. Something about the Amish mind, he said, when you start cranking it down on it, the thing really expands. He said, the New Order Amish are doing better than we are because they went after the heart of the matter. Now, I want you to think about that. I'm not saying there's never a time for agreements. I'm not beating up on that issue. I'm just saying think about the heart here, actually valuing souls more than sales. Demonstrating Jesus in difficult situations. When you see a difficult situation, you are looking at an opportunity. That's what you're looking at, unless you see a difficulty. Let me give you an example. There's an example. I've used it before. I think I've written about this one, too. I need to be careful where I'll use these stories, but there's an individual who had a tree business, and he got a call one time, and they said, we have an aspen tree or an ash tree that we'd like to take down. And so he got the address, and he went out and looked at it, and he got there, and there was a beautiful ash tree, but there was also an aspen tree that wasn't that great. So he got back home that night, never did see the customer, called this lady and told her, it's actually the aspen tree you want to take down. Not the ash is a nice tree. She said, no, I want the ash tree gone. No, I said, you don't want that. He said, it's a nice tree. You take the aspen down. She said, no, I want the ash tree out. So he went out the next day. She was at work, and he cut down this ash tree, ran the thing through the chipper, just barely got home, and the phone began to ring, and this lady was upset. And she had the two names mixed up. He said, I'll be glad to come out and put another tree in next Saturday. She said, what good's that going to do? It'd take 30 years to get that tree back. Now, that's an impossible situation. When an ash tree goes through the chipper, you're pretty well done with that ash tree. What are you going to do? Well, here's what he did. He went back out there the next Saturday. He got the biggest ash tree he could. He started trimming her shrubs. He just started working around that place. He just cleaned up. It wasn't actually his fault, although he should have went out and flagged it with her present. But he could have argued. He could have went to court. He might have won. I don't know. But he kept on trimming trees and working around that house until she started bringing him iced tea. And in the end, she was calling her neighbor saying, you ought to have this guy work for you. That's how you redeem impossible situations. That's about as impossible as you get. But think about the difficult situations that you have in business. Use those. Redeem those. Sometimes God places those in our path, and we can redeem those and we can use those. Allow yourself to dream how you could use difficult situations. What if our churches were known for greater financial transparency? You know, sometimes we wait till a crisis comes, and then we start talking about the finances. But is it possible we could actually talk about it before that? As brothers, we could come together, and I'm not talking about total open, everybody knows everything, but a little more communication so we know when somebody's struggling even. You know, we're able to talk about lots of issues. Why do we get silent when dollars come around? I think it's fascinating in our culture. It's no problem for me to ask you how many acres you farm. I can do that. How about if I ask you how much money is in your bank account? Ooh, that's different. Why is it different? They're both assets. But it's a cultural thing. I've heard of one country. I tried to find there's a country where it's swapped, where you don't ever ask someone how much land they farm. But think about that as in our communities. Is there a way we can get a little more open with each other on this issue? What if our churches were known for a lack of interest in accumulated wealth? What if it was just known in the community around? These people are unmoved by that stuff. They're good businessmen. They work hard. But you can hang free stuff out in front of them, and they don't care. Their eye is not on that. Get-rich-quick schemes, you can show them all that stuff. They're not chasing all that. What if we were famous for that? What if we were known for that? I remember a story of an Amishman where there was a financial crisis, and they ended up getting together. The man obviously did not have assets to cover anything, all of his debts, and they got together one evening and worked it all out and went home, and it was a lawyer heard about that. He was amazed. How do you do that? How do you get together and actually talk about this stuff? But what if we were actually known for that, famous for that? What if our churches were known for holding the businessman accountable? What I'm proposing today is that we both bless the businessman and hold him accountable, just like every other gift. You know, we are known for holding people accountable in some areas. What about the lifestyle of a businessman? Just the expenditure. And I'm not calling for revolution here. I'm just saying, go home and talk about this. Think about this. Are there ways that we can do better at this? What if the church could both bless him in his giftings and hold him accountable? What if our churches were known for encouraging kingdom business models? You know, there's a tremendous need in our world, especially among people that are poor in America, for jobs. That's part of a business model. What if there are ways to models we could create to employ some of these individuals and get them off the couch and actually working? Many of them long for that. They really want that. I know I can name some right now that really want that in their life. Now, maybe some of this seems really out there for you, but before we walk away from this, I want you to look at some words. And the multitude of them that believed were of one heart and one soul. Neither said any of them that aught of the things which he possessed was his own, but they had all things common. However you want to interpret that, you're going to have to say their eye was not on their possessions. They were like a family. They were coming together. And I'm talking here, maybe it sounds out to lunch, but you have to admit the early church at least had what we're saying is impossible. You think it really mattered to them who wins in a business deal? You know, it's so easy for us to say that it's all the Lord's, but we get real interested in whose money the Lord's, whose pocket the Lord's money is in right now. But in a setting, a church setting like this in the early church, you think they were real concerned about that, about who had what? Is it possible we get too obsessed with that? But I want you to notice the result of what I just read. And with great power gave the apostles witness of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. I want to propose today that if we could have that kind of a mentality about our businesses, if we could actually use our business as mission and reach out through them to our communities, it would be powerful in our community. I want to encourage you to keep that vision alive in your heart. Maybe it looks impossible to you right now. Just not possible. But keep the vision alive. I think it is possible. Visualize small groups coming together in churches and working together on this. Even groups of businessmen working together and holding each other accountable. You know, business in our world has a bad reputation. It's like a big black backdrop. It's a beautiful place to shine right against that. And I want to encourage you to do that today. And I'm going to, are we out of time? Okay, let's just stop. I want to say, any questions, any comments anybody wants to make? We'll open it up real quick. You know, some topics like this, it's good to keep the rental car running outside. I've noticed that on technology.
I had a situation where I was a kind of a manager for a business. There were no other Christians working there. And ran into some conflicts in marketing. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on working in a business where you're the only Christian and giants?
That's an interesting one. I don't write off. I don't know your situation exactly. But many times we do get into these settings, especially like you're saying, where everyone else has a different vision. We have to be very careful how we portray and how we push and how hard to push on some areas. But if you are being asked to do things that really are not in line with Christianity, you have to quit at that point. But I'm amazed at the teachings of Jesus. Many of them really do help a business. I think about Domino's Pizza. Some of you may know that story, but Domino's got into a point several years ago of just having a bad reputation for their pizzas. And so they did a little testing, and they found out that the pizzas weren't very good. That was the problem. And they decided to be honest. And everyone said, you're crazy. But they went on television and said, we've tested our pizzas. Here was the result. Some people said it tastes like cardboard. We're redoing them. And they were totally honest about it. And the secular world said, that's not going to work. You don't ever, ever do that. But it worked. They were just honest about it. So sometimes honesty really does work. So anyway. Okay, he says we're out of time. So Lord bless you.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.